Well, it's, I mean, honestly, it's part of the criminal justice system. It's...
Recording in progress.
All right, we'll go ahead and call the Public Safety Committee potential quorum of the council to order for Tuesday, September 5th, 2023 at 6:30 p.m. Present, we have Chief Waddell, Deputy Chief Markell, Councillor Hancock, Councillor Washburn, and our committee members Todd Olson and John Edwards. Are there any changes to the agenda? Approval of the March 23rd, 2023 and August 1st, 2023 meeting minutes. Everybody get a chance to look at them.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for March 23, 2023 and August 1st, 2023.
Second.
All right. The meeting minutes look good. We'll move to number four, public comment on items not listed on the agenda. Anybody online can press star six if they want to talk. All right, number five, committee and subcommittee updates.
As you know, that we selected two new members to the subcommittee, so I wanted to welcome you guys, both of you, Todd Olson and John Edwards, to the subcommittee, or to the committee. As we discussed last meeting, we wanted to have a subcommittee. We had a member that was selected to that subcommittee as their chair. He has since elected not to take that committee. So the committee, the subcommittee actually has only two members to it. So the suggestion is up to the committee to decide whether or not we continue with a subcommittee that only has two members, that we chair it with one of you, or we open it back up to find additional members for a subcommittee.
Go ahead.
I think that we should thank the two people who are here and that they're on the committee and let the issue go. Yeah, because I think it's pretty tough to have a subcommittee with only two people.
I agree 100%.
I agree.
All right.
Departmental updates.
So in front of you, you'll see kind of some information on our what's going on in the Jefferson City Police Department. So first of all, I've been here boots on the ground, so to speak, for about a month. And one of the things that I hope everybody knows about the Jefferson City Police Department is we have wonderful men and women that work for us. And so it's been an honor to get to know the people that work here. But we are charging forward with change and the way things that are hopefully going to be ran in the future. But one of those things is getting our dispatch center up and running and fully staffed. So that's been my main priority over the last month. We have done an interview process. We've done the online testing. We've identified three people that we're going to move forward into backgrounds. So that's where we're at with that. Our officers, that process gets started this week, probably. Deputy Chief's gonna run that process for us. And then SCOPS will probably either start this week or next week for the actual contacting the applicants and getting that underground. Our sergeant's gonna run that one for us. We have stats, and I know you that the council's always loves stats and goes and filters through the stats. But one of those things that last meeting I wanted everybody to know is that there are certain things that are changing in Junction City. One of those is our response to abandoned vehicles. So if you move down a little bit, so in the month, and this is missing a couple days of the month because we ran stats a little early. So where it says vehicles, the Junction City Police Department engaged with 72 vehicles, or 71 vehicles that were considered abandoned, and that could be from calls for service, or that's officers going out and finding vehicles that look like they've been abandoned. And if you want to go into details on what we do for that process, I'm more than willing to share with how that process works. But out of those 71 vehicles, we ended up having to tow 9 of them. So that means that the officers have engaged that vehicle at least 3 times. They've tried to reach out to the owners. They just haven't been able to gain compliance. The kind of our direction for Junction City PD is that our goal is compliance rather than being punitive in this regard. So if my math is correct, that's about an 87.3% compliance rate for when we engage vehicles that appear to be abandoned or otherwise. So that's either the vehicles that most likely have moved, they've been parked, no longer parked on the street, or by the time we've just given them warnings, they've disappeared into the night, whatever. So you're more than welcome. I can go over the stats if you want. I kind of highlighted some of those stats when it comes to some of the major calls that we've gone on to. So blue is kind of like, you can see where I put abandoned vehicles, that we did 58 of those. That's just how we've titled those calls. The yellow seems to be things that we do a lot in a month period of time. So you can look kind of like highlight those. One of the things that we did add since I've been on board was a program called Frontline. So if you want to look on frontline.com, you can, but it really, this is an accountability transparency type of a program that tracks all our, what I used to call threshold events, our use of forces, our vehicle pursuits, any kind of complaints that come into the Junction City Police Department. It will also do our compliments, so it tracks those kind of things. It will track behavior as well, both good and bad. And it actually has a wellness component, which we don't have turned on right now, but eventually it tracks things that would help us take better care of our officers. With that frontline program comes our DOR, daily observation reports that we use when we hire new officers or new dispatchers. So it's a program that we can build to model whatever DOR or FTEP program that we want. And currently that's pretty much built. There's some tweaking that needs to go on, so when we have new dispatchers and we have new officers, we'll have a online DOR platform for us to use. Since I've been here over the month, I've reached out to a ton of different agencies and asked for training and help with our training program, because we only have, you're probably an instructor and something, but really 2 or 3 instructors in-house. I'm an EVOC instructor, kind of a use of force type of guy, but we have 1 taser instructor, and that's it. No firearms, no DTs. So we're reaching out to agencies around us and asking for help. Everybody's been, all the agencies that I've talked to have been super supportive, willing to help us out and helping us get some training. And bringing it until we can get our own instructors and we get our own and stuff back in line where we need to be. I think that's it for updates.
All right. Go to the Springfield Jail contract renewal.
Do you want to talk about this one? This is...
Yeah. We have a yearly contract with Springfield Jail. We've been doing that since 2015. This contract actually expired at the end of June. So it's just a renewal. The only difference is a $4 increase per day. So it goes up to $135 per day. The contract only lists male inmates who have been sentenced already by our court. Fortunately, due to their staffing levels, they won't allow us to do females. They already landed on their female beds. Again, it's just a continuation of the current contract. Nothing's changed except that.
So it doesn't include females at all?
It doesn't, but they've allowed...
At times?
Yeah, and we're careful with the court to use it...
Sparingly?
Yeah, so we don't overdo it.
Is there... Did we look at Lynn County at all, or any of the other facilities around that might do contract work just to compare prices, or...
We haven't lately. I know the sheriff's office was a lot more.
Okay, no, that's what I'm asking. And so, have we talked to them? Because I hate for somebody not to be sentenced based on their gender, and that would be something that we would want to look at is... So is Springfield willing to work with us on that, or is there like a delayed sentencing we might work with the court that we can put somebody, schedule somebody to go to Springfield?
Females again on special occasions, but and we can talk to the sheriff's office again and see what that cost is, since these guys won't allow females.
Right. And then,
and open up that.
What's the prospects for our jail of getting that open and actually holding somebody there?
Once we have dispatchers 24 hours.
Okay.
Kind of follow up with that. It's kind of that update from, since you guys weren't here last meeting. Our jail was open for a period of time until we our dispatchers became unsustainable to open it up. So as soon as that happens, we will open the jail back up.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Is this anything that needs to be moved to council then, or?
Yeah, I would just info here, and then I'll go to council to approve the contract.
Okay. School resource officer program contract.
There is one little change on this contract, which I didn't catch the first time I read it. So the signature line on this contract, it has my name, which wasn't, it was the superintendent put it on there. The version moving forward will actually have the city administrator's name on it per signature, not my own. So I sat down with the superintendent from Junction City School District, given some past input from council and committee on the last contract that kind of was brought forward. I listened to that meeting notes and that negotiated some things that were in that contract that it seemed to be kind of hanging us up on it. Some of those things, like territorial, whether we were going to provide services or territorial, or one of the things that it got removed from this version to that was that they had named the officer to be assigned as a school resource officer. If there was language in there that if our SRO was absent, that we would try and find backfill, which Junction City PD doesn't have the labor in order to make that happen. Any long-term absence from our SRO would be negotiated or would be talked about with the school district, and we can stop the contract at any time. I'm a patrol first type of person. I believe that we should we should provide our services to our citizens. Which does include our schools and our little minor children that are running around there. But I think this is the right move for the department at this time. The officers are all in support of doing this, even if it means that they have to sacrifice a little bit themselves. So the contract's in front of you for guys to comment.
And there was something I think we talked about too for training, like for going forward, that maybe the school would start providing funding for training as well.
Yeah, I talked with the superintendent, and one of those discussions that came up is that we've already got at least our prime candidate has already received some training throughout the school year. If there's training that comes up, we're going to document the kind of training that the SRO needs. And then we're also going to document and keep track of our overtime. And then when this contract comes up for renewal, we'll sit down with the school district and figure out how much overtime we're actually spending to cover events that are at the school or things that are happening at the school. And then we can discuss and negotiate costs for whatever that training is needed for those officers to be in school.
Any questions?
I have a question.
Do you have an idea what, I see that they're reimbursing the city back $66,000. Do you have an idea what a whole in cost of that program is for us?
It probably twice that, I would assume. I would assume an officer plus the benefits are probably double that.
They're getting a pretty good deal.
For the school?
The school's getting a good deal.
I think it's a good deal for the school. I think, you know, I think they have to, start somewhere, and hopefully that's, when we move forward, we can create our value in the service that we provide.
That was the same question I had when I was looking at that. I just don't know, has HR ever worked out what would be a contractual rate by hour for an officer that would include the benefits, the vehicle, that kind of stuff broken down?
Probably not. I mean, I'm inheriting this whole problem. I don't know what the steps that worked before I got here. Do you know?
Yeah, I think it was about $120,000 for the officer. The entire
for the 9 months
cost. For that, for the full year. So then you take out really closer to only 8 months in the schools.
Right. Yeah. Well, and when I broke it down was. So I did my math, and I went to a rural school, so bear with me. But it's 165 days for a school year. And then they're expecting the SRO to be in school 8 hours of the day. That's when they're having school. And taking that $66,000, that comes down to $50 an hour. And I think that's just about right around just costs for an officer. That would not include the benefits. That doesn't include the vehicle moving. That doesn't include extra events or anything else like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just my math. So I don't know if we need to talk to HR about having that broken down, what it would cost with the benefit package and everything else to use that for negotiations next year.
Yeah.
So I do think that the school resource officer is an important program. I believe that we need to have one there, but it's just, at what cost does it come to the city compared to the school district? So.
And how far are you into this contract?
How far? I think the version that was sent over today was the superintendent has a signed copy ready for us to do something with, which would mean that we would take it to council as soon as council said agrees to it or approves it, and the city administrator would sign it. And
this is just a one-year contract? The only reason I bring that up is a little history on school resource officers in the city. This would go back into the 90s sometime. They wanted a school resource officer, so the city went and got a grant. And the grant paid 100% the first year, 75% the second year, 50% the third year, and the school was supposed to pay for that. And on year four, they were full bill. And on year four, they said, we don't want the deal. Well, the city was obligated to the grant, and it hurt the department for years after that with grants, because now all of a sudden the school didn't do their part. Yeah. Now, I know there's different people involved today. I just want to duly noted that in the past, they haven't been the best partners on this. So I just want to make sure that if that's something like that happens again, that we're prepared to have different language.
Yeah, I think that's a good reason why we're not on a grant, and that's a good reason why we do year to year for a contract instead of trying to do something long term. One is that the police department, we can't promise something years down, because we don't know what our staffing levels will be. But I thank you for the information, because.
And I'm pro resource officer 100%, but it's just who pays for it.
So can I jump in real fast?
Yeah.
To answer Todd's question. So also what the school resource officer is going to be doing is doing DHS referrals. So if you look back at the stats just from August, without school being in session, they had 19. So while it's school kids related, it's not necessarily a school thing that's going to tie up a lot of their time to either some of those other hours.
Okay. So. Just a couple of things. Obviously, you know I'm big supporter of the SRO program, and I appreciate the changes that you made, Chief. Those were critical, so I applaud the fact you went back and even listened to the meeting, and you were ready, so very important. I'll pick up on the, you mentioned DHS, so I do have a question on that, but let me just run through a couple of things real quick. In sub J, under duties of the SRO, it talks about the police officer may be present, right? During searches administered by the school. And then on the next page, it says when conducting searches on property, the SRO will follow all the constitutional requirements, which is the right answer. So I think there's some probably conflict in getting involved in school searches that are initiated by the school and having the police officer come and be a part of that. Yeah. So you might want to think about that paragraph. If you're comfortable with it, I know you have a lot of experience with SRO, so if you're comfortable with it, then I get it. You mentioned DHS, so how are we filtering through and only working the DHS referrals that are related to residents of Junction City? Certainly we're not working county DHS referrals simply because they go to school here, right?
Right, yeah, only within our jurisdiction.
So on the, I can speak a little bit to the DHS stuff.
Yeah, I bet you know.
So on the DHS, when a call gets called into the hotline at central office, their job is to send it out to whatever county DHS. So like Lane County is District 5 for DHS. And depending on where the family resides, a copy gets forwarded to the appropriate law enforcement agency. So if they live, you know, out off of River Road a little ways, it's going to get sent to the sheriff's office. If they live on 10th, it's going to get sent to Junction City. So there may be students that go to school here, but it'll be the sheriff's office that'll get the copy. And not every DHS case requires law enforcement to even respond to.
Yeah.
They got to read that. They got to work with us to find out, do we even need to get involved, or do we let DHS kind of let us know if there is anything to move forward on?
Right.
Because a lot of times,
response or something.
Yeah, a lot of times it's nothing.
I appreciate that. I know you know better than anybody in this room. So, let's see. I also wanted to mention under investigative procedures, I'm sorry, I know this is detail, but I read it. So, mm-hmm. In investigation procedures, sub A, it talks about SROs and other law enforcement officials may interview students at school during school hours across. And there was a Senate bill, 386, that was passed that kind of governs some of that. So, I just wanted to mention that. Not looking for any kind of a response on it, but. I found that bill to be, like, could definitely be a problem for policing. So, related to that, that's all I had.
The only question I have is, if something, I'm sure I read it in here, but something goes down in the city, the resource officer is going to be pulled out immediately to back up our officers.
Yeah, there's still a police officer in the city.
Right.
Yeah. And the superintendent knows that there's going to be times where there's things near the school that the school resource officer may be handling. Could be school kid-related outside, just right outside the school. So, you know, the importance for us is being transparent and communicating with the schools about what we're doing, what we're not doing. The days that the people aren't there, that school resource officer is not going to be there every day, but most of the days, and then as long as we're communicating. If we have some major incident in town, and it could be that the school resource officer themselves is doing an investigation that takes them outside the school, as long as they're communicating with the school and letting them know, I think that's perfectly okay.
And I guess one of the things, we don't have anybody that goes to the game for kind of little security like it used to be back in the day with the reserves.
We only have two reserves right now, so we're trying to rebuild our reserve program. But our school resource officer will be at the football games. I'll be at this Friday night's game myself. And so the officers are strongly encouraged to go if they can, if they're on duty. And the school district can really decide with the school resource officer if they want to pay overtime, or if we want to pay overtime for a school resource officer to be at a football game or a basketball game or any event, or we'll work together to figure out what best to serve the community.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else on school resource officer? All right, the Junction City Municipal Code 10.05.220 prohibited parking and standing.
So this was kind of more of a follow-up about the things that we're working on in Junction City. As I mentioned, I was here for my second day when I had this first committee meeting. But by that second day that we had already started to change and affect this policy and put this policy in municipal code into effect. So our officers are out there doing stuff. The question came up for this is about how we're treating RVs. We're treating RVs just like we do vehicles. We're going to follow our code that we have on the books, and we're going to enforce it the way that we're supposed to enforce it. I don't know if that answered all your questions.
I know it answered mine, because I do agree that they're a problem. And I mean, we have trailers that have garbage in them, sit for months. We have RVs on the streets for years that are being stored. And so it would be wonderful to see the police department enforcing that law again. And probably as you've experienced throughout your career, most of that is through mutual understanding with the public and developing that rapport. And 87% of the time you're going to resolve it, and probably not even more than that, probably 1% you'll end up having to write a citation. So I'm very thankful to hear that the department's going to be back to, I know you don't call them sectors anymore, but I forgot what you call them. But I think that type of policing is really critical to, I know, to the citizens. I mean, they want a safe and secure environment, and they don't like looking out at the same RV parked in front of their house for 2 years. So, very much appreciated.
Yeah, and I know that there's some public comment out there that we're not doing enough, quick enough. We still have responsibility for our calls for service, and the officers are doing the things they can, and we probably have, how many calls we have right now related to abandoned vehicles?
Right now there's 4 on the screen. Tyler took care of one earlier.
Yeah, so they're constantly, the way we do things is that our calls don't disappear. So this call stays in on our board for officers to continue to come back and check. So other agencies, they go out and check it out, and then it just disappears into this magic fairyland. And then hopefully we get back and somebody gets back and follows it up. But we're leaving them on our board for us to continue to see them, work through them, go back and check on them. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And I think that as you progress through this, you'll have less and less complaints, because when you get caught up and you actually start enforcing those laws, then eventually you're going to have the neighborhoods cleaned up and there'll be less calls for service on those issues. And then when the sector's officers sees one that begins being stored out on the streets, they'll probably intervene before it becomes a big problem. The issue you have right now is it's gone a number of years without being addressed. And so now you have a big problem. And it's going to take a while to clean it up.
Yeah.
But appreciate the efforts.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, is the way the code is wrote, are you happy with that? Or does it need some change? Because I know a lot of these are old.
Well, I think it's workable. I think my opinion is that most of our code needs to be updated.
Yeah.
Not just this one, but a lot of them are outdated and could use a once-over through and ran through our city attorney to make sure that everything we're doing is current to state standard and law. There's nothing in here that prohibits us from taking the action that we need to do. There may be some things in there. And I know that there's been discussion about out of our municipal code for a long time. It could be at committee level, subcommittee, at council level. And you can go back through the minutes and look at where things have been said and ideas have been thrown out. But the way that I look at municipal code is if it's on our website and it's there, that's what I'm enforcing.
Yeah.
Until it gets changed, the words that we talk don't change the law that's on the book. So unless I get specific direction to do something different or opposed to that, that's how I'm going to go and do my job every day. So is there stuff in here that can be changed? Yeah, there's always little tweaks in here, but everything that we're dealing with now, you know, this could actually talk about what happens when you have an RV that has a person in it. But we should our officers should already know the answer to that. They don't need the code to codify that for them. But yeah, most of our code can have little tweaks to it, if that answers your question.
So you've been here a month, but it's not fixed yet?
Well, one thing at a time, sir.
My question, when you notify, is it, are you wanting an in-person contact? Or is there like, you see on I-5 where OSP slaps a sticker on a car that's been abandoned or has been on the side of the highway for extended period of time?
So I look at the abandoned vehicle that's out on the highway, and what we're doing in the city is kind of different, right? So the abandoned thing on the highway, we don't really necessarily have those, and when we deal with them, I want our officers to deal with them as a hazard. If they're out on the highway and they're causing a problem, those are immediate. We're gonna order the tow because it's under the hazard statute, right?
Right.
But in town, my expectation for the officers is that the first time they go out and they see the car that looks abandoned, they should be trying to figure out who the owner is and trying to contact that owner the first time. Then they chalk the tires, and then they come back and they look. They come back in 72 hours. They find the car still there. They put a sticker on it, which we don't have stickers here. Which at some point prior to my arrival, they got rid of the stickers because somebody complained about the sticker residue on their windows. So we're trying to, you know. So then they really what? When I got here, they were a white piece of paper, and so I found out that it was a white piece of paper. We changed it to a bright colored piece of paper, and eventually we'll get the stickers again. But yeah, to answer your question is that we should be trying to contact an owner every single time we touch that vehicle. Like I said, for me, it's about compliance.
I'm sorry, not to interrupt. I was just thinking a sticker because the citizen who's made a complaint or the third one who's about ready to make a complaint, lower your guys' call volume there at the PD, taking in all that stuff. They can see a sticker that's on the car. It's like, okay, somebody's been here.
So your suggestion is like our first time we touch the car?
I think so. I mean, just because I think you're going to get repeated contact by other people or the same person who's called in, like, hey, you guys haven't been here. Why are you guys not here? Kind of thing. So that's just my take on it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a differentiate between something that's clearly abandoned,
right,
weeds growing out of it, versus somebody that just called in. They don't like their neighbor parked there.
Right.
Right.
So yes,
we need to be able to process and think through those problems.
Correct. Now the other thing I have, because I, you know, a big thing with the homeless population is the RVs. There are older ones. Do we have a process where, because some of those have asbestos in them, they have to go through an abatement process and everything else, do we have a contract with somebody, or how does that, have we looked at any of that kind of stuff?
My guess is that we don't. I think when we need to tow a trailer, that we tow it, and then whatever happens in the tow yard is up to the tow yard.
Okay. Because my understanding, what I've heard is that whoever authorizes that tow ends up getting potentially stuck with that bill for that asbestos stuff. I don't know if we have a company that we work with or anything else, or if that's something that we need to review or check into.
It's definitely something I need to look into because, you know, if we have a bill for asbestos on a trailer that was parked on a street for a long period of time, part of that's, you know, we don't want that to be an everyday occurrence, but
right,
we also, it may be something that works the city getting that off and paying that bill and then just getting that motorhome taken and done with, or
okay,
RV done with. But I'll look into it.
Okay.
As far as I know, we haven't ever been stuck with a bill.
Okay.
So we have four companies that we use for rotation.
Okay.
And I've heard it's like $3,000 to $5,000.
Yes.
And
it can get expensive fast.
We need to just got the bill today. The county landfill, they will charge the cities, Bonita, Creswell, Cottage Grove, Junction City, because the county will only demolish vehicles that were found in the county. But if it's one out of the city, those cities are going to get that bill. And one of the things the city manager talked about there is for this next budget year, you need to do a line item budget for those kind of tow bills.
Can we just relocate the trailers?
Tow them out the county.
Tow them out the county.
Yeah, you have three counties here.
Take your pick.
We'll be equal opportunity.
So that's pretty much just an update. I'll look into that, see if we have something we can look at and put in place, or like a suggestion that was made. Is work on our next year's budget and figure out that this may be something that we're going to be seeing a little bit more.
I think potentially if you manage it long enough, they quit coming here.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll see a decrease quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could be a short-lived problem.
Yeah.
And if it's okay for 10 and 11, I'd like to switch those so we can go over the agenda forecaster and then we can have comments if everybody's okay with that. Everybody all right with that?
Okay.
All right. We'll go to the agenda forecaster review. Do you guys have that too?
Let me start this.
Yeah, if you'd like.
So this procedure is kind of new to me. So you can see that there's a lot of things that are blank. Because I just need to see how this whole agenda forecaster process works. So I took some stuff on it that was on an old one that I had, put some things on it that I thought that we want to continue to try and readdress or put into our minds as something that we need to come up in the future. I would assume that was an agenda forecaster, just by the words itself, that's what kind of means. So, so some of those things that are you'll see on there are just things that I threw on there, things that we need to be thinking of. There's 100 things on my list of to-do list, but what I want you as the committee to know is that we want your input, put this on there so that way we can continue to come back to the committee with some answers, or if on a, instead of a canceling the meeting sometime because somebody hasn't planned it, that would be me, that way I could actually have something that to bring forward to you as something that you had wanted to hear from us. So it's just a better way for us to communicate for you going forward.
So Chief Waddell and I met last week, supposed to be for an hour, it was like 3 or something. And one of the things we talked about, which I think would be good for the agenda forecaster, is like a want list, a wish list, but then prioritize it to what do we need and what would we like to have, and get those on the forecaster, because I think if they're on there, we can work towards them, and we can keep them on there as long as we need to, but it's like a goal that we have to work on. Just a little bit of time that I was over there, I got a tour and stuff, and like, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done. I don't know if you guys have had the chance to go over there recently, but if you have time, take the time to go over and just look at what they currently have now. And I talked to a couple of the dispatchers while I was there, and it's like, what's working for you guys? What's not working? And some of the stuff seemed minor, kind of petty, but it was like their chairs. Like, these are chairs they sit in, but they sit in them 24/7, so they're constantly getting used, and they were crap, to put it nicely. So, but you know, this is where they work. This is where they spend 10 hours plus of their time, is sitting in these chairs. So, you know, same thing like shoes, your boots, whatever. Like, that's where you spend all your time. So you need stuff that's working good, that's not wore out, that you can be in for a long period of time, no matter what it is. So we talked about that a little bit, and I think getting some of this stuff on here and then looking at the budget, and we still have some stuff to figure out on the budget, is good, because one, it keeps stuff to talk about, and we get stuff done that way, because like, we can move that off to, you know, future business, and like, then it's on the agenda and we've got it done, and then we kind of can just keep moving things forward on it. But it's basically for goal setting, which is what we need to do. But I think I really encourage you guys to go over there and talk to some of the people working, and see, we looked at the other building too, and there's a lot of stuff that still needs to be done in all the buildings. But you know, we don't know until we see it and we get it on here to start working towards it. So I think that's good, and I think if we keep things on here, we keep our meetings going, which is what we need to do. Any questions? So I think once you guys see it, you'll come back with a list of stuff too. Anything from Eric?
I've got a procedural question. So to get this list going and to get the forecaster up and running, do you guys give me what you think should be on there? I put it on there, bring it to the next meeting. How does this continue to get built and move forward the process?
There is a form that people can get stuff on the agenda, but I think for the forecaster, I think if we talk about it here and we're in a majority vote of it, then we should put it on the forecaster.
But I think also that ideas need to come from you guys.
Yes.
You guys are the ones that spend 24/7 in that building, on the street, your uniforms, the things that you guys need to get to us. That's what we need to have, that information.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think I brought it up in some of the meetings, but we only know what we know.
Yeah.
And that's what comes from all you guys. So if we don't know, then we don't know what to work towards.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we get environmentally blind to the things that we have around us, and it takes someone walking through and say, what is that, and how's this? And, you know, kind of like what you did the other day, it was like, you know, things that you see that we pass by every day because we're used to working in that environment. So, I'll bring those things to this list, and hopefully, you know, tours are all, our doors are open to all you to come and take a tour if you want.
Yeah, like flooring, that was a big thing. The floors, the walls, like the whole thing. But there's a lot, so, you know, we need to still figure out budget stuff, I just kind of told some of them that we're working, start coming up with a list. And they had stuff on a whiteboard already, and one of it was to get a whiteboard. And so, but you know, it's like some of this stuff might be, you know, seem really, really petty, but it's what they need to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important. And if it needs to come to council in order to get it, then bring it on to us and we'll figure out a way to get it. Any other questions on the forecaster?
I do. I'd like to see how many vehicles we actually have still. And everything, the number of trailers and all of that.
And the condition.
Mm-hmm.
You got a 200,000 mile car out there. Probably something we need to think about.
We're not that bad yet.
But we did talk about it the other day. 3 hours, we covered a lot. And so one of the things that was brought up is previous chief purchased, what, 7 2017s or some?
6 or 7.
Yeah. And so if they're all being used, they're all going to go out. And so we talked about having a rotation of vehicles too, because I think that's important.
Yeah.
A 5, 10 year, 15, maybe not 15, for, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately I'd like to have a one vehicle a year and a budget line that I know that's there. They just constantly, so we're constantly rotating cars rather than having to have a 6 or 7 car purchase at one time.
Yeah, and I think more obviously wear and tear on a car, as I'm probably the one in the room that drives the oldest vehicle in the fleet. Stuff starts to happen often, and then when there's no money and there's no car, and then pretty soon we're back to sharing cars, and nobody's happy with that. So I get it. I think we need to, you know where we're at with all the vehicles right now. And what we need, what we don't need, what we can get rid of, because I think that helps too. Because if we have it here, whether we're using it, it's drivable, whatever, we're paying insurance on it. We have to. So I think that's important too to know. All right. Now we can go to the committee member comments. Start with Sid.
I've been contacted by several people about Ivy and 6th and Greenwood right over here. People blowing through the stop sign and almost running over people in the crosswalks. Because I see it all the time, even on night out here on, I call it 99. But Ivy, people don't stop for people. They just keep going. And if you do stop, people are flipping you off and hollering at you and everything else. And I think it's maybe time we do a little sting on that to get people educated. And then I've noticed a lot more speeding in town, especially on Ivy and some of the side streets. It's pretty bad. Because a lot of people have talked to me about that. And that's all I have.
I have no comments on this time.
What?
Only time we might hear that. Todd?
I don't have anything.
Okay. I know you got something.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So first of all, so comments. I want to tell you, Chief, I think you're right on track. You know, you've got the, you're pointing the ship in the right direction. You're making the right decisions, supporting the community and the citizens, and that's what we need. And I would just like to ask now, in a different vein, I'd like to ask that you take a look at whoever our background investigator is, because I know you're going to be doing hiring and make sure proper credentials are all in place and that you're comfortable with that process, okay? And then I really appreciate what you said about having instructors and developing instructors, because I think that's a part of retention. I think that's a part of keeping people and making them a part of the bigger team and letting them provide services that really matter to each other. And so I really applaud that. One of the problems we have right now, and I'll tell you, is the council's responsible to approve the bills, right? And so we get this spreadsheet, and it just has a name and a number, and I have no idea what that is that I'm approving. And it makes me nervous that way. We used to see the actual bills at committee level. I would love to see that. I'm not saying that has to happen, but I would feel a lot more comfortable if I saw the bill. Because, for instance, we got a bill for several thousand dollars for Nancy Heron. Can you tell us what that is then? Because we have to say yes to the approval.
Yeah, so I didn't know much about Nancy Heron until I got here. Actually, I didn't know anything about her. She provides a service that does basically a LEDS, uniform crime reporting kind of expertise. She went back multiple years because we hadn't been reporting our crime data to the feds or anybody else by that for that matter. So she went back multiple years, has looked at individual, she reads reports, she has access to those kind of things where she gives us feedback on things that we missed when we talked about reporting, we talked about crimes. She has this weird contract with the city. It's an hourly rate contract that doesn't establish how many hours in a month that she works, how many. So it's some, that's something that we need to revisit with her, mm-hmm. part of her contract with, or letter, whatever it was that the former chief made with her, is that part of that is that she needs to train her replacement. Not her replacement, but train someone to do her job. So she's the expert and she was going to provide that service to us. She was in the middle of training about to train our administrative assistant, but then we lost our administrative assistant in this most recent budget. So we don't have an administrative assistant, and so therefore, in order for us to keep up with our UCR reporting, we will end up having to find somebody in-house to do that. Mm-hmm. First week in, I had a LEDS audit. So it was a nice welcome to the neighborhood type of thing. So the one shining star that we got out of that whole LEDS audit was our UCR reporting. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much time. I know that the last two bills that we got, she put in 49 hours in 1 month and like 29 in the other, something similar to that. I may be off a little bit. But so she's not working a ton, but you know, from what I understand is that the product that she's providing us is noticed at the, by the auditor. So I don't know if it's worth it. I have to look into it. I have to find somebody that she can actually train in-house to do the job that she's doing for us. So yeah. It's going to take a little bit of research on my part.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen, because AIRS used to extrapolate the information automatically and send it straight to the FBI. So since we have this new software, which isn't really probably the best, I can see where it would happen. But I would ask this. So if it's a contract that has to come before the council, and so I've only been on council since February, so maybe other council members remember this contract coming forward. Certainly a chief issuing a letter hiring somebody would be something that I would ask you to just take a look at it and make sure that we're following the proper employment guidelines. And we have an HR person, so I'm sure that they could help you as well with that. But anyway, I don't want to belabor that issue too much here. Let's just, a couple other things. I really like the idea about LCSO and contacting them to get pricing, you know, then I feel better about forwarding something to the council, saying that we think this is a good idea. I am concerned that it's for sentenced only. That means probable cause arrests are kind of out the window on misdemeanors anyway. I don't think Lane County Jail is really taking misdemeanors, right? Unless it's a DV or something.
I agree. I believe that.
Yeah, so
I think
that's a huge tool not to have available to us. And I know you're working on that as part of the grander scheme, but without that jail, people could get misdemeanor crimes and we have no way to take them anywhere. So that's a real problem. So I'm not the only benefit we're seeing then from Springfield is the fact that if you have a problem prisoner, you could take them there.
I mean, you could take them there. It depends on how long they're going to hold them. So it also depends on their charges that they have. Because like domestic charges, if I recall correctly, all domestic misdemeanor felony charges all have to go to the county jail.
Yeah, they unless it's DV, right.
If you make an arrest for a misdemeanor on any crime, you can take it to the Lane County Jail. It just depends on what they have capacity base, whether they keep it or not.
Right.
So they may do a release right out the door, and they could be in there for an hour. They're released out the door, but it depends on there's a whole other status.
Sure.
Like how many times they've been arrested, what charges, all those things that they figure out. Right. But yeah, they do take them. It's just a matter of with Springfield, they're going to house them. They're going to keep them because you're paying them X amount of dollars, and they're going to do it, but they're going to do it the same way. If they end up getting, let's say they have 100 beds and they fill up 100 and you bring 101, somebody's going out the door no matter what.
But it's my understanding with Springfield, it's only for those who have been sentenced, right? So we can't take probable cause arrests. Right. So that's the piece.
Yeah. So you can still take them to the Lane County Jail. And just
yeah. Well, right.
But you have to think about, the thing that you have to think about is, do I take a person that walked on the wrong property for a trespass and you can cite and release them, or does this person's behavior say dictate that you need to take them down to the jail because you're going to lose an officer for an hour, say,
right?
Drive time,
right.
Booking time, all that other stuff that you got going on.
Yeah. Last but not least, right? I would ask this on behalf of the citizens. When there's an issue, you don't call them sectors. You're going to have to help me out with a new name for that.
Neighborhood policing area.
Okay, those neighborhood policing areas. So I think we need a lot more contact by those officers. And what I would ask is if a citizen calls something in, that there's some kind of follow-up done, some kind of communication later with that citizen who says, you know, I called this in, then you never hear from them again. And we can say that we have neighborhood policing officers, but if we don't hear from them, we don't have neighborhood policing officers. And so that's really, I think, would help, honestly, with relationships and understanding, is if there's follow-up contact by the police department with somebody who's made a call to the police department, either requesting an officer or asking for something to be done or reporting something, that somebody then gets back in contact with them and tells them what became of it. So, I know that's probably already on your list of expectations, and I'm sure you're already addressing that, and I have no doubt about that. As I said, I believe you're 100% spot on right in the directions you're going in, and I very much appreciate it and value it. So, that's the end of my comments. Promise.
We're back to Sid. He had two more things.
For
First off, thank you for reaching out to other departments. That's really good. And then I really want to thank you for the fire department and the police department getting together to have a community get together and everything. That way it shows that we're working with everybody as one unit instead of you're over here, I'm over here. And I think that's really, really going to be nice.
I hope we're going to have a good event, 14th.
I want my steak medium rare, please.
It might be the fire department that cooks that because they're good at that.
Did you have anything, Eric?
I do not. All
right. I just want to say thank you also. I think this is good, you're here. I think we didn't get where we're at overnight, so I know it's not going to be easy. But I think you're the right person to be here and do this. I think you've got a good group of officers and dispatchers working with you, and I think it's just going to take time. So I think we're headed in the right track. And then what I don't have on the agenda before we adjourn is public comment, and only you can talk.
Speak.
So go for it.
I can bring you one of the Bonita stickers if you want to plagiarize that.
Yeah, well, you can bring it because we have the words and the verbiage. We just don't have it in a sticker form.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try to find out where we're getting them made, if that helps.
Nice. Yeah, ours were more paper-based, so when it got wet, you could pull out all the writing, but the
paper stickers,
the glue actually the stuff. So if you guys have vinyl stickers or something, I'll figure out where they're made at. That's all in one piece.
I'll bring one in and see what you guys
do.
Because right now we're putting the pink paper in essentially almost like an address label sticker to keep it waterproof. So it's still stuck to the car. It's just
right. Not an actual sticker. And I absolutely agree with trying to contact the RO. We just get so many vehicles out there anymore that buyer info not on file.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why those stickers. Yeah, and then you'll see the car move 2 blocks or 20 feet after you sticker them. Yeah, no, that doesn't work. Do I have anything else? The training, I will do my best and try to get everybody involved.
Yeah, I appreciate that. What I'm hoping is that when everybody else has training, that they remember Jefferson City PD needs some training, so they kind of...
I've always tried to work towards that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Also, I just want to say, back in the day, Eric might remember, we did have complaints about the stickers being put on cars, that it was, you know, when they go to pull the sticker off, it damaged their vehicle or whatever, I don't know. I don't know. But for the longest time, I would use bright yellow paper, and I would put it inside a Ziploc baggie and put it under their window wiper to tag vehicles. And so there is a sticker, because I think it was just, we had 2 or 3 people in the neighborhood, I'm sure they got together and said, oh, look, they damaged our window or something. We had to use razor blade to get it off, and we had to scratch our window up or whatever because they stuck a sticker on it. So we resorted to paper and Ziploc baggies for a while too. But if there's something that works better that we can still get the same point across, I think it's worth it.
And forgive my ignorance, but there's state police, there's county police all over the country, right? There's probably some sort of a standard sticker that they use.
They're all the same. They leave the glue, but who cares?
Yeah.
honestly.
A sticker's a sticker.
You put it on the glass, right?
It's on the glass, paint, yeah. You know? It's goof-off. Not like you're putting it on a 2-year-old Mercedes.
Yeah.
Who cares? Really?
Yeah, it's unless they're putting it on the paint, I'm not getting this.
Yeah. You
know, I think an orange sticker with adhesive on the glass is fine.
Yeah, and something that you can alleviate in regards to those complaints is that you put the sticker on, you take a picture of the car, and you put it on the window that has no tint or whatever else. You put it on the front window, you put it on the back window, snap a photo real quick, put that in whatever CAD you have or whatever you have.
And our officers do take the photo. It's also, just since I've been here, saved us a couple of complaints that came in about wrongful towing and that kind of stuff. So they're doing a good job taking photos.
All right, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 7:30. Thank you, guys.
Great having you guys here. You know, I just got out of bed.